Welcome to the UK MSDN podcast, show 16. In this podcast, I get a chance to talk to Phil Legater, and we talk about the real-time web and specifically around Silverlight. It was recorded on the 20th of November, 2009. The links for the show can be found at bit.ly/MSDN podcast. And I'm Eric Nelson. Hope you enjoy the show. Good morning, Phil. How are you this morning?
I'm very good. Thank you, Eric. How's you?
I'm fine. I think we're both working from home today. And you wrote an article for me a couple of weeks back, actually, didn't you, on real-time web, real-time data and Silverlight. And it's my fault entirely that we've not got around to doing it till today. Probably a good place to start is to explain a bit about yourself, where you work and where you focus on technology.
Well, I'm Phil Legater. At the moment, I work at Kaplan Systems, who previously were branded as the real-time web company. We now focus on, well, we always have, focus on financial services and trading applications. That's where the money is. And that's where we build a lot of our products around. So we were probably one of the pioneers of real-time streaming data to the browser, first through a Java applet, and then secondly through AJAX, HTTP streaming. In addition to working for Kaplan, I've set up my own company called Independent Software Solutions Limited. And my focus with that will also be real-time data distribution, which was one of the things that I spoke about in my article, obviously. I also work for an e-commerce solution called InStockDirect.com. And I'm also thinking about doing some kind of social media brand management for probably services through my company. And we're registered with BizSpark, so the whole software as a service really fits in with that if we can offer brand monitoring services. So that's kind of a bit about me.
I'm curious, do you actually manage to fit in any hobbies around all that?
I go for the occasional run, and I quite like a pint down the pub.
Perfect hobbies. Yeah. Running to the pub being an ideal one to do it. So so the article then, and when you approached me about doing a real-time web article, the first thing I went and did was go and have a figure out what people were calling the real-time web these days. So what do you mean by when you talk about real-time web?
Well, okay, what I'll say first is what the general term real-time web is meant by at the moment. People talk about the instant availability of data. So as soon as I tweet something, people can search on search.twitter.com and find my tweet almost instantly. In the same way that if I publish a blog article, Google picks it up straight away, and then someone searches on Google and they find my blog article. What I think the real-time web should be, and probably is not just about the instant availability of data, but the ability to say, I'm interested in this data. As soon as anything like it becomes available, push it to me. So that's basically what the article is all about. It's about, and for me, the real-time web, it's about being pushed the data as soon as it's available, rather than it's all very well floating around on the internet, but if you're not being told about it, then what's the point in it being there?
You mentioned a few different ways of achieving real-time. You mentioned client pull, server push, but you start off by talking about publisher-subscriber hub.
Yeah, that's right. So a publisher-subscriber hub, to me, is very much a server-side technology and a server-side way of doing things. So firstly, there'll be a subscriber. So for instance, in Google Reader, I'll subscribe to your blog, iupdateable.com. And that'll obviously make the subscription to your blog. Your blog is aware of that. On the server, there's some stories to say that Google Reader has subscribed to this. As soon as you publish a blog article, your blog's aware that there's a subscriber. So it pushes that blog entry to the subscriber, publishes it. And as I said right at the start, that's very much a server-side technology. It's not the sort of thing that a client technology could do or a rich internet application, because it requires a web server or something listening on a port, I would guess. So and a static IP address or maybe a dynamic address. So maybe it's possible on the client, but not really at the moment.
And one of the things a lot of us have done is some kind of client pull approach. So some kind of timer that allows us to, or an event handler on the client that allows us to go and have a look to see if there's new versions of the data. And you mentioned that's one of the approaches that, well, in fact, WCF Duplex Services can take advantage of.
Yeah, WCF Duplex Services and a lot of the original Comet solutions used polling. And I think even most applications now, so I'm pretty sure that the Twitter homepage will use polling, the Twitter search page will use polling, and anything else that, I mean, even in BBC football, their site, they update their scores on a Saturday in real time, or any time in real time ish. And what they do is they poll every 10 seconds or something. The thing with that is that if you really need the data as soon as it's available, there's obviously a lag. So if you've just polled and then the data becomes available, you're going to have to wait another 10 seconds before you actually get it. In a lot of situations, that doesn't really matter. So the BBC football website, does it matter that you're 10 seconds late? Or 10 seconds later, you receive an updated score? Probably not really. But if you have if you've got an application or you really need that data in real time, then you've got to maintain a connection from the client to the server and have the data pushed to you as soon as it's available. The two obvious examples of that are trading, which Kaplan Systems focus on. So you need to instantly be informed of a price change. You don't want to trade on an invalid price. And also in betting, so someone like Betfair, I'm pretty sure they'll use a streaming connection to make sure that they push prices. So for instance, if you bet on a game of football and the score changes, you don't want somebody listening on the radio or watching on TV and seeing that the score's changed, but the site not updating, and be able to place a bet on Liverpool beating Man City, which is unlikely.
Never happen. Never happen.
But you don't want to be able to let them make a bet on invalid odds or an invalid score, things like that. But I think more so recently with the real-time web being ever popular, that there'll be other uses for really real-time data or truly real-time data. And the actual real instant availability of that data rather than the polling solution.
So to get that instant ability, and indeed the core of your article is talking about using HTTP server push as the solution. And the article is about using that with Silverlight. So what sort of challenges do you have with bringing Silverlight and HTTP server push together?
Well, actually, the challenge to start off with is just to, it's pretty simple, really. From the article, you'll see there's one connect method, which just creates an HTTP web request and makes a request to a server. So that's not that difficult. There are some kind of tricky points in there that you need to turn off the read stream buffering, and also closing the request was a little bit tricky, just to make sure that the connection drops. And the other difficult part of it that isn't covered in the article is the server technology, maintaining that streaming connection. So you can imagine that this is probably why at the moment there aren't a lot of truly real-time websites at the moment, because they have to maintain potentially thousands and thousands of connections. So I think that's really the trickiest thing. In terms of the Silverlight, a Silverlight application and the Silverlight code, it's really simple.
Okay. So so you mentioned the challenge of the server side, maintaining all those connections. And indeed, that in the past has been one of the exact reasons I've moved to client pull for large systems where we've needed to, update tens of thousands of clients in what looks a little bit like real time. Is there movements in the industry? Is there stuff that we're doing? I haven't really looked at what we're doing with IIS in this world. Is there any optimizations happening out there or frameworks?
Well, first, I'd best say that my company's solution, Kaplan Systems, we've got a product called Liberator, which runs on Linux or Solaris, which isn't obviously a Windows solution, but we are working towards porting that towards Windows, so that could be available. But obviously, that doesn't run through IIS. That's massively scalable, and I could get you some figures if you're interested in, on how many concurrent connections and real-time updates could happen. But I did see recently that there's a company called Frozen Mountain that have released something called WebSync, which is an IIS plugin or something. I believe it will appear in the IIS console. So certainly they seem to have made leaps and bounds towards making it scalable. I think, as you said, I've read in various places that the threading model within IIS sometimes makes it difficult to have Comet or, you know, maintain streaming connections. So maybe they found a way around it.
Okay, so we've mentioned Comet a few times. It's probably worth just explaining what we mean when we say Comet.
Yeah, well, Comet previously was very much around Ajax. So it would be that, there was talk of a streaming iframe connection, or more recently the XML HTTP request object in JavaScript making a connection to a server. But it really is about the HTTP streaming. So you open a connection to a web server and maintain that. So if it was the Comet iframe solution, it would be that that iframe would set its source property to point to your server, and that information would be streamed through and pushed out from frame-to-frame communication with JavaScript. With the XML HTTP request object, again, you just make a request to the source of the data, the server, and that, maintain that connection open. One of the other things about Comet is that you would have two channels of communication. You would have, firstly, a back channel, which all the data is pushed to you on, and secondly, a request channel. So the request channel, you can... Basically, it's very much a subscription. So you've got streaming data on your back channel, and on the request channel, you send, you're calling methods or making subscription changes on the request channel, and that affects the data that's pushed to you on the back channel. Again, a diagram might be better, but hopefully that works.
You've got some good stuff on this on your blog, though, haven't you? Because this is what you tend to blog about, real time.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things I haven't really covered at the moment is the server side things. I've really been concentrating on these real time rich communications. But certainly, one of my blog posts that I plan in the future is the.
In the last bit of your article, you did throw out some gotchas that you've got to watch out when you're building Silverlight applications. There's some general gotchas in there, just about data. Probably worth speaking to those. But also, you mentioned a good one, which is threading. So let's start with the general stuff, which is about how you should pass the data around and the volume of data that you're dealing with for a real-time application.
It depends on the platform. For instance, we were talking about Comet, and generally it used to be an Ajax term or a browser term. That doesn't have to be the case. It can be that the client could be a .NET desktop application, it could be a Java desktop application, or any other type of desktop application. But generally, when we talk about rich internet applications, they're clearly running in the browser. So the browser as a platform has come on leaps and bounds with releases of new browsers concentrating on performance. But still, although it's the web OS, it's not as performant as running directly from your desktop. So you need to think about a number of things. The first thing is the data, the amount of data you're consuming. If you can restrict that to only the data you need, then that's clearly very important. So when we're talking, the example that I was talking about was the real-time Twitter stream. So if you're actually trying to consume the real-time Twitter stream in a rich internet application, your browser's going to hang, unless they've come on really leaps and bounds. I don't think you're going to be able to consume the amount of data that Twitter spits out. So you want to be restrictive on that data, so you need to filter that data from the server. Secondly, the format of that data is important. So as I said in the article, XMLs are verbose. So that means there's a large amount of data being pushed across the network and into your application. So if you can look at keeping that data as the contents of that data and as small as possible, so that you can, if you can directly use it as it comes through, you don't need to manipulate it, then clearly that's the best way of getting it. Maybe JSON, because it's smaller than XML, is a better format. But then again, you need to think about how well the technology handles parsing and manipulation of this data. So if Silverlight, I haven't checked this yet, but does Silverlight handle JSON in terms of converting it and deserializing it, onto objects better than it handles XML? So which one's more performant? So there's quite a few tests you need to put together to deal with that. But certainly the best way would just be to get the data, use it as you receive it, rather than having to do anything with it.
So you mentioned the Twitter example. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that one of the things you did was you managed to trick Silverlight into working with Twitter, even though Twitter didn't have the right little bit of information that Silverlight was looking for to allow you to pull information off it.
Yeah, so yeah, that was the tricking Silverlight into allowing a cross-domain request. Yeah, the cross-domain request's a funny thing, really. So browsers have been battling for ages to try and stop people doing it because clearly you don't want cross-site scripting, people being able to inject things into your web page. But now everybody wants to do that.
Yes.
Kind of mashups.
Yeah.
Wants to fetch data from loads of different sources from cross-domain places. So cross-domain policies have been invented by, I don't know who invented them, but so to say, actually, I am going to allow somebody from this website to connect to me. So the way that that's done at the minute is there's three ways. Adobe have taken a cross-domain policy file. Microsoft with Silverlight have done a cross-domain policy file, a slightly different one, although they also support the Adobe format. And there's also talk of browser headers, HTTP headers that will say whether or not you can connect to me. So in consuming the Twitter real-time data stream from the Silverlight application, you connect to stream.twitter.com, and that doesn't have a cross-domain policy file. So Silverlight won't allow you to connect to it. So what you do is when you make your HTTP web request, the first thing the Silverlight runtime does is it checks for a security policy file. Firstly, client access policy.xml and cross-domain.xml. And if it doesn't find either of those, it knows that the server won't actually allow you connect to it to get the data. So what I did was, what you can do with any proxy, obviously you put a proxy in the middle, and then as soon as you see a request for the cross-domain.xml or client access policy.xml files, you can fake a response and return that file, which will trick the Silverlight runtime into thinking that the server has allowed the request. It's probably a bit naughty, but obviously if you're actually distributing the application, then each user isn't going to have a proxy in place that does that. So I think we need to contact Twitter and tell them that there's value in allowing people to stream data to rich internet applications from their service, really.
Yeah, I did think it was an interesting way around it. Fiddler seems to solve so many issues for my life, and that was another great example of Fiddler solving a development issue, even if it isn't necessarily something you would propose to distribute widely with an application.
That's right. Even at work, we use Fiddler to when we're on client sites to try and diagnose network issues and see what the browser's misbehaving or whether it's a networking issue.
Yeah, it is a magnificently good product. I'll make sure the show notes has a direct download for Fiddler, but I'm sure if you search for Fiddler, it'll be the top link these days. Okay, so that's good. Now, I think we've managed to cover everything in the article. Probably just worth finishing on just a little bit about how you think the future might evolve around the real-time web. Is there anything that's coming that you think is going to make things easier? Or is there, any trends that you think we'll see more and more stuff happening?
I think the obvious thing is social media. Whereas technologies in the past have been developed for financial solutions, other areas will find a use for it. So clearly real-time web was first used in betting and trading, and now we're seeing it move into the social media space, the instant accessibility of data. I think we're going to see it used more and more in that space. But I think the main developments that we're looking for is probably server technologies advancing to be able to maintain these constant streams of connections, so constant connections from thousands of users. And there are technologies out there at the minute, but they're just not widely used. So people should be going out and trying comment servers. And also, I think the rich internet applications, although they're quite big at the minute, they're not as big as they probably should be, to push the processing of information and the application onto the client and away from the server is certainly the way that I think we've been going for the past few years. And I think it's going to go even more so. But what we need to do is we really need to open up the accessibility of data. So this cross-domain problem, I think, really needs to be solved. And people like Twitter and other companies that have this data available need to make it accessible to these rich internet.
If folks want to check out your blog, which has lots of good posts in this area, they would go to?
It's http://www.legata.co.uk, and Legata spelled LEGETTER.
And that's the same spelling you are on Twitter as well.
That's right, yeah, /Legata.
Marvellous. Well, thank you very much for that, Phil. I actually learnt a lot. So that was very useful, and I did that terrible thing where I was reading your blog at the same time, learning yet more, so I was doing multitasking. Anyone says men can't multitask, they're wrong. Thanks very much, Phil. Have a good day.
Thanks, Eric.